And then we've got our online set up here. I don't know, we've got one student who might pop up online. Technology is so brilliant. But we'll see. So, first of all, welcome to the Brawl Place. Now, Aaron and I formed, so Aaron's my husband, and we've worked together for a very long time now. And we formed the Brawl Place in the beginning selfishly. It was like, what I found around, we worked in lots of industries, advertising, marketing, hospitality. He was in fashion, we worked in the arts. A lot of balls in the air. I had a very familiar relationship with stress and anxiety. And we were really good at all the doing. And everyone around us, you know, lots of brilliant, creative, dynamic people, very successful, again, very good at the doing. And if you want to become better at doing things, lots of methodologies and ways in which you can get higher education around that. But who was the human being that sat behind all the doing? I found there was three very specific genres. There was kind of, thanks, sweetheart. There was kind of like a large-scale conference, happy-clappy, sort of, you know, kumbaya, kind of, yeah, let's do this environment, which doesn't scare me as much as it used to. There was also a sort of like methodical, sort of dry, TAFE-style, you know, fluoros, sit in a room and a bit of a dry course. Or there was sort of like the full moon circle, spiritual, which I quite like, Aaron. The word spiritual makes him sweat. Yeah. The idea, he just literally thinks everyone sits around in cotton underpants and holding crystals. or hemp underpants, as he puts it. But I was like, there's got to be... And so what happened was it cut off a lot of opportunity for learning about Eastern knowledge, about ancient practices, and about spirituality. Spirituality for me is very much defined as who am I in the world, not as, you know, burning incense, although I do like doing that. But it's so much more than that.
Yeah.
Aaron was always like, I don't know, spirituality is like weird books, incense, smelly carpets, and yoga. I was like, it doesn't even scratch the surface.
Yeah.
But this is what I encountered all the time was, you know, a lot of us have lots of precognized ideas around what this means. And so I felt that for a lot of us, this kind of knowledge and education was cut off because of this. And so we formed the Brawl Place essentially because... I just got someone coming online. Let me say hello. Hi there, how are you? Can you hear me okay?
Oh, hello.
Hi, how are you?
Hi.
There's just a little bit of a lag there.
Okay.
I'm Jack.
Hi, Jack. Lucy.
Hi, Lucy. I'm just going to keep chatting through where I was and then
okay.
I can catch you up at the end if you need.
Excellent.
So we essentially formed it as a way in which we could provide something that I've always been fascinated in, that I'd spent years and years, since I was 18, learning about. And studying and practicing this beautiful ancient knowledge, but then making sure that it was applicable for modern living, because that's where I felt the gap lay. And so we formed essentially what we call a school, and we teach to three pillars of creativity, clarity, and consciousness. And meditation has been one of those key parts. And what we've done is every little thing, Aaron's a creative director, and so every little thing we've tried to draw on our own personal experience and our backgrounds to create what the kind of experiences that we love having. So the bowls, for example, that you're drinking out of, what's in them is an Ayurvedic tea. In Ayurveda, where I'll talk about meditation, and it comes from India, it's very ancient, it's where our meditation technique comes from, and it's about balancing the mind and body. What you're drinking is vata. So we have them all hand-blended, they're all organic, and the little bowls, for example, Aaron came home, you know, years back with a sample. He goes, look, do you like this? This is the 18th version. Yeah, I love it. Like, is it a bowl? Is it, well, it's a teacup without a handle, because I wanted everyone to be able to hold the bowl in their hands. And I made the clay, I got the ceramicist to make the clay really gritty so that when we watered down the glaze, and what we noticed is that you could see through to the little grit. And what that looks like for me is like a little galaxy, and it's reminding everyone about
it's
that.
Not into spirituality.
and it's that thing, you know, when you talk about consciousness, and I just thought, everyone gets to hold something unique to them and that reminded them of that conscious whole. And I was like, that's so beautiful. So I was just a cop. So, you know, Aaron is, and you know, we like to serve little biscuits because I've had a few really pivotal experiences when I've gone to Japan and sat with and learned through a monk. And you arrive and they give you a little wafer and a little green tea. And it's that coming from the freezing and I'm tired and I finally arrived at the temple and I excited to meet, you know, this esteemed teacher, and I get there and then someone comes out with a little hot drink and a biscuit. And I still remember, you know, 10 years ago when I first saw an Ayurvedic doctor, and he was working out of his house, and I got there and I was emotionally, physically, and spiritually a mess at this particular point in time. And I sort of was at my last legs. I was so strung out. Molly was a baby, my daughter. And I turned up at the house, and she gave me a cup with pumpkin soup in it and with a little papadum. And it touched me so much. You know, it's like I felt held. I felt loved. And all those kind of experiences, and when you go, everywhere you go in India, you get a thimble. You know, we don't drink chai like this. You get a thimble of chai. And it's a shared experience, and I've always loved it so much. So those kind of things, I was like, why can't they be part of education? Like, those beautiful experiences. And everything in the space is the artists, we had a palm tree just crash down and take out our fence in the storm, and that dried our branch came from that. Like, every little piece here has a story to tell. So we wanted it to be homely, and so that when people go, yeah, I'm going to learn, it felt like a familiar, beautiful space. So that gives you a bit of a background around the intention. The where that went from those sort of beautiful, simple little ideas is that now we've been very fortunate that our original, like, would anyone else be interested in this? We've been very fortunate. It turns out lots of people. And we teach now through Asia and America. This year we launch in Europe as well. We do retreats around Australia and in India. And we do lots of workplace programs and workshops and all sorts of things. But what I want to talk to you guys tonight about specifically is meditation. Lucy, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can. Thank you.
Alan Jones style mic, that's why. And my friend who's in sound set this up, and I was like, dude, really? But with meditation, what I found is most of us kind of go, oh, it's a blanket thing. Meditation, sitting down and closing my eyes, and the thoughts go away, and then I experience something, and I'll be an amazing person at the end of it.
Yes, and then, that's what I thought.
Yeah, and then we try. And then we try. And we're like,
it's really hard.
Yeah, what's this bullshit? This is so hard. And it was never explained to me in the beginning, and it took me a long time to figure it out, is there's so many different types, and if you liken it to exercise, you've got to find the one that's right for you. Now, I'm going to spend some time tonight giving you some clarity around, or helping you gain some clarity, I should say, around what a meditation practice might look like for you. I'll talk about the technique that I teach and how I teach it, and if at the end of that you go, yeah, great, that sounds like it's for me, unreal. If at the end of that you go, nah, that doesn't sound like it's for me, and you want something else, then based on what I'll teach you now, you might be able to get a better idea. And please come to me. I've tried them all. Because some people say, you know what, this sounds great, I don't want a 20-minute practice, I want a 3-hour daily practice. It happens. And I'll be able to point you in the right direction for those kinds of things. So that's what I'm here for. That's what I see my job is, to help clear up the mystery of meditation. Why I asked you those little questions around what might you want to get out of a practice is, generally we're not asked. If you go to a personal fitness instructor, the first thing they're going to say is, what do you want? And you might go, well, I want to lose 3 kilos, and I want to be long and lean. And ideally, what you would say, for example, is if you went, well, I want something one-on-one, and I want small concentrated movements, and I want real mastery of my body, and core is very important, and, you know, serenity when I exercise is a big deal for me. And they went, great, and tossed you through CrossFit, you'd just be completely bewildered. Likewise, if you said, I want, you know, like, team activity, I want to be, like, spewing at the end, and I want to be run through my hoops, I want to build muscle, you know, and I just want it to be all about community, and they put you through a one-on-one Pilates class, you'd be like, what is this? You know, you'd be disappointed. And I find that's the case with meditation, because there's lots of different types, and no one ever asks. Well, we kind of all go, I don't know, it's all the same thing. So there's 3 primary techniques with meditation. Lucy, can you see that from there? I'll read it out anyway, but the first word is contemplation. So if we imagine the mind like an ocean, so we've got the choppy, busy part at the top, lots of thinking, and the ego would be like a rain cloud, you know, raining down less desirable emotions, like anger and frustration, it's creating more chop. We spend most of our time snorkeling around up here. And what we've got is this beautiful depth to the mind, and then there's a state underneath it of being where there's no doing. And I want you to think of this, it's got a few names, I won't pure consciousness, soul consciousness, bliss consciousness. You'll hear it referenced in many ways. But it's a fourth conscious state that I like to think of the unbounded whole. It's where our soul lies, where all the love, the passion, and all the juice that we have as human beings sits here. But most of the time, what we're doing is we're hanging up here. Now, contemplation, meditation, is where you generally listen to something. I think it's a really nice beginner's step because you're guided through something. And it really keeps the mind engaged gently up here. The purpose usually is for relaxation. So we meditate, it's like, a little reprieve from my busy day. You know, a moment in time where I'm distracted enough that I can feel quenched. And it's great. It has its place. Concentration meditation is where a Zazen practice sits, a Vipassana practice. It's where you concentrate so singularly on one thing that you are, ideally what you're trying to do is create a gap in all of this and plunge down into this state. I've done a lot of it. It takes a long time to master. Most of my teachers over time have been like, oh, you're 10 years. Of which case, I was like, being one of those people that want everything now, I found that a little bit challenging. Then there's also transcendent techniques. Now, usually they all fall into one category, where there are mantra-based meditation. Mantra, think of it as sound. And you can imagine now that we're diving into the layers, how freaking confusing it gets for everybody. Because mantras, there's thousands of them. They all do different things. Again, like meditation now, it has a bit of a broad brushstroke. It's like, oh, my mantra in life is this. And yeah, that's my mantra. Mantra really means vibration. And if you've heard of transcendental meditation or Vedic meditation, that's the foundation of essentially what I'm teaching. But what happens is with the mantra, the mind then dives down and slips because it follows the mantra. So it's a really easy, effortless practice. And it dives down into this state. And then it bathes in that state. So it has a naturally occurring thoughtless experience. However, something else goes on when we meditate. So when we're practicing these techniques, what happens is there is also a releasing of stress, tension, fatigue in the body. Now, we have 80 to 90,000 thoughts a day. Sometimes it's said 120,000. Aaron always laughs that I have 150,000. But all those thoughts, what they're doing is they're creating a cellular impression on the body. And in that cellular impressioning, so we're basically storing up the data of our experiences. When we're meditating, what we're doing is we're releasing them. They're called samskaras in Sanskrit. And osteos, kinesiologists, most healers that you know work off the general Western mainstream are working with the same modality. How do we get this stuff out of the nervous system? And I do have a lot of referrals from practitioners because they say to students, you need to independently be doing this every day. Best way I can describe it is my tech guy, Sean, came in and my little MacBook Air is just constantly floundering, and, you know, the little spinning wheel of death.
Yeah.
Too many things open, apparently. And he came in again, and I was like, what is going on again with it? You know, you were only here a couple of months ago. And he sits down, and he's like, you're not clearing out your caches, you know, cache acacia. And I was like, I don't know what they are. And so how do I clean that? He's like, I showed you how to do it last time. I was like, I know, but it just seems like such a waste of time. And he said, okay, everything you do on your computer, you open a file, you move something to your trash can, you everything. You send an email. It's creating a little shadow memory of that, and it's storing it up, and it's taking up RAM. And it's useless, essentially, but it's the way the system works. And I said, oh, that's cool. Like, can you just turn that bit off? And he goes, no, I can't. You've got to physically clear them out. And we've been having a conversation about meditation before. And he was like, what's the fundamental difference between the type you teach and a guided meditation? And I was like, that. What you just described. I said, when we talk about meditation, the body is literally emptying and dissolving out these samskaras, these caches, these little cellular RAM in the body that we don't really need anymore. It's useless, but it's still in there. And so it's clearing it out. And the output of meditation, when we talk about all these things that I'll talk to you about today, I want to already highlight, it's not the stuff that happens, the output, what we call benefits, doesn't happen when we sit down and close our eyes. So that's one of the fundamental differences, because most meditation is, oh, I feel relaxed, and then I'm back to my day. Mm-hmm. What we're doing when we're practicing this technique is we're laundering. Sometimes the meditation practice is a little rah, and then the experience of clarity and creativity and more expansion happens with our eyes open. Now, why I really like to highlight this is because it took me a long time to figure out through trying various practices, oh, thank God, because I don't want to have all my clarity and all my creativity and all my feelings of expansion and love and compassion and feel so great and rested while I'm sitting stationary with my eyes closed. I'm not much used to the world like that. And so I want you to start thinking of this particular practice as something that we do. It's an integrated technique. It's something that we do so that we can be more grounded and engaged in the world with our eyes open. And it's a big difference, because most meditation was designed, all of it in the beginning, was designed for enlightenment. That's the only reason people practice meditation. And that would be amazing. if we ever get there, we'll have the conversation what that might look like. But that was it. And now, and why I think it's becoming more popular is because this technique that I teach was really designed for an integrated life. It was never meant to be done for a long period of time. Most meditation is, you know, hours and hours a day. It was done in an ashram. It was done in a monastery. And the responsibilities and the demands that were placed upon the practitioners of it weren't huge. And so people like us, householders, we were called, people that lived in houses and not in a cave, in a monastery, we, running houses, we didn't have a technique. And so the technique was specifically designed for, okay, how are the people like us on the ground doing all the work that don't want to be celibate and want to live rich, textured, creative life? How do we meditate and gain the benefit and gain that expansion in the shortest amount of time? And that's why I call it heavy-duty cleansing. You know, we do it 15, sometimes 10, but usually 15 to 20 minutes a day, and there's a lot going on. And it means that it's not necessarily, so when we sit, you literally sit like you're sitting right now. When we're sitting to meditate, we don't need to worry about external noise, being quiet, or special spots, you know, lamis and crystals, don't need to apply. You can do that if you like, but it's really, most of my students are meditating on bus, in the back of an Uber, in their own, a lot of students with small children, their favourite spot is in their parked car in their driveway, before they enter the house, you know, sitting in bed, on the lounge, at work, in a meeting room, at a church, in a prayer room, like anywhere you can sit, basically, with your back supported. Close your eyes, you can meditate with this technique. And the whole purpose being, because we live integrated lives, we have to integrate our meditation practice. So creating rigidity, I always put it like this to students, we meditate to be more flexible, dynamic, and creative. And in the Veda, which is this beautiful body of knowledge where our meditation comes from, 5,000 years old, there's one thing. So what we want to do is, when we look at our meditation practice, meditation makes us more of this, and we apply those exact same principles to our meditation practice. So being flexible, dynamic, and creative. Literally, students are squirreling away 12 minutes sometimes in the afternoon at work in a broom closet, because that's the moment in time in which they have to cultivate their practice, and the output is such that it's, they can do it anywhere like that. That's the purpose. And for me, the portability and the flexibility is so key. Otherwise, what I've found for myself and other students is, if it's very rigid, you just don't do it. And if it's not, also the output isn't tantalizing and rewarding enough, you just don't do it. Also, ongoing support and accountability, that's not there, you don't do it. There are the few that are incredibly disciplined, and that's not me. But why we decided to structure the course the way we do is to take all of those things into account. Essentially what my daughter and I call our human beingness, you know, like the stuff that gets in the way of us being totally expanded and you know, in this beautiful unity consciousness is the fact that we're human beings. And we gripe and we get caught in traffic and we, you know, get frustrated with little people that don't know where their school shoes are and, you know, partners and friends, and we get slighted and the cafe doesn't have almond milk and, you know, all the rich textures that we have in the first world. But this kind of stuff, it's still real, it's our work. That's our spiritual work, is how do we stay grounded, calm, creative in those sets of environments. Our meditation practice is going to have to fit in there too. Does that make sense about, does that give you something to think about in regards to, okay, with practice? So I'll wipe this off. Then, essentially, over the years of my teaching meditation and learning, and there's the Vedic meditation, which is a practice, whose original influence was transcendental meditation, and which is the mantra-based practice. What I started to notice more and more is I integrate a lot of knowledge and teaching. And I study Zen and Buddhism and Taoism and lots of modern science. And in my opinion, there is, if we look at the one thing, there is inspiration to be found absolutely everywhere. And in the same way that I go to see my osteopath, who I love, and he's technically, that's what he's got in his business card, osteopath, but he also pulls in acupuncture when you need it, ancient, and he pulls in laser, which is modern. And he also does a little bit of, he teaches a bit of meditation for people when they need it. And they do massage, and they do all sorts of different things in the moment in time when they need it. And I found that, I was talking to him about this recently, about a year ago, and he was like, it's exactly what you're doing with your meditation. It's integrated. It's not just, there's a foundation there, of course, but there's also lots of layering. And I found that more and more, that's for me personally, but also for my students, that's becoming more relevant. I read a beautiful, I was just watching Abstract. Have you seen Abstract? That amazing, yeah.
I watched the
Did you watch
Esther
Devlin? So for me, I feel that, and she says this quote, Esther Devlin is the stage designer. Fascinating. Abstract is the new series on Netflix on designers. And you should definitely watch it if you, it's like chef's table for design. But she says, like, we cannot find the light without moving through the darkness. And for me, I mean, a great spiritual master could have said something like that. She was talking about set design, but the language and the concept and the idea just so resonated for me. It was like, and of course we can't. Like, we all want that lightness, but we do have to move through and navigate through darkness in order to find it, and it's even brighter. And there she is, a set designer. And, you know, I quickly paused it and wrote it down because I'm constantly writing down these little bits and pieces to integrate into my teaching. And Aaron's like, okay, you're really taking the cake now. You're getting, like, and I said, but that's the thing, there's inspiration everywhere. Like, it's beautiful education everywhere. And so the way in which I teach meditation now is based on that. It's based on a foundation with extra things on top. So I'll walk you through it. The output of the practice, actually, I'll talk to first. And I've got your little notes there. I ask those things. Not, I wanted to stimulate thought for you, but also I'm nosy and I like to know. There's a really interesting cascade of interests for people. Now, stress is usually the first reason people learn. Now, so I feel stress gets a really bad rap. Now, if we look at stress as a thing, and we hold it responsible for something outside of ourselves, which we all love to do, we hate hearing that stress is perception. It's the way in which we view things, because then it makes us accountable. If it was our boss, for example, we would just get rid of our boss, and we would never have felt stress ever again. If you had a client that was really driving you crazy, you would literally remove the client, never be stressed again. You know, a partner that we might have had driving us nuts, you know, creating a lot of stress, a lot of angst, emotional tension, get rid of them, we would be blissfully happy forever, there we are. And we know that's not true. Have you heard of the saying, wherever you go, there you are? I love that saying. The idea being that us, with our neuroses and our human beingness, we just keep carrying it around. So stress, when we look at it as cortisol and adrenaline and the neurochemical output of those, that perception, that's one thing. A little bit of it can be really good. It's very quickly tipped into a negative balance, but, you know, like a deadline. Deadline sharpening, sharpen the pencil, the emotional, the mental pencil a little bit to get those things done. You know, if you've got a long time to do something, you find that, you know, yeah, I'm stressed about it. What I've got forever tends to not get done. Stress is multidimensional. But most students, in the beginning, they come and they go, you know what, I'm experiencing stress to some degree. It doesn't seem to be going away. And the way in which we live in my world doesn't seem to be getting any less engaged. It's a beautiful thing about technology, Lucy, point and take, case in point, and these kind of things that we engage with, but engaging with them in the right way is really, really important. So stress is usually the first reason that students go, yeah, you know what, I need to reduce it. Or a practitioner or someone that they work with has said, you know, this will help with the stress. That's usually the first thing. But it tips into all the other things. Clarity is usually the second most important. Students are like, my clarity is going. Usually they're referring to my decision-making power, my knowing who I am, like what am I supposed to be doing, my personal purpose, my values. I feel cloudy here to some degree, or, you know, work decisions, or do I want to stay in corporate, or do I want to become an entrepreneur, or seems to be the number one question everyone's asking at the moment. Now I'm an entrepreneur. Everyone, this is the new one. But these kind of things, and I don't know, I can't see. So this is really impacting this. So when we're meditating, we're dissolving the stress, tension, and fatigue. This is making a big impact, and the flow and effect, to be transparent, is great. That said, clarity for me also blends into creativity. And it's not that students come to learn. I mean, I teach a lot of creators, mostly because Aaron and I come from those industries, we know those people. But creativity isn't, like my mum says, oh, I can't even draw a stick figure. Creativity is, can I expand and appreciate creativity as much as I contribute to it? So we can definitely look at that painting and go, yeah, wow, you know, it's a creative person created that. But you can have creative accounting, my favorite type. You can have, if you can have creative anything, like you can be creative in the way you drive a bus, in the way you drive an Uber. It's your ability to appreciate and the extraordinary things in life and then contribute to them to the best of your ability. And I found that these two are incredibly linked, because also what sits under here is confidence. And I think that's where stress starts to erode this. Now, yes, with the technique, we've got the science, with this meditation, we've got the science that it increases the gray matter and also increases, so we become more intelligent. That's science-based. And also additionally, the reaction speed increases. I teach sports people a lot because they love that. They need faster reaction speed. We want those two things going together, being wiser and making faster decisions. We don't want to be making lots of faster, stupider ones. But for me, what it really comes down to, if we put the science aside, is that these three work together. So when our clarity increases and we can see more and know ourselves better, our creativity increases, our appreciation of the world and our creative flow states, and then that fuels confidence, which fuels clarity and fuels creativity. More and more, I'm seeing these three is going together. The fourth one is usually based on physical, and you can interrupt at any time. If at any point you go, what? Don't hesitate, sure. The physical, there's lots in regards to the physical. There's a 48% reduction in the risk of heart disease, helps with indigestion, with immunity. It's a great immunity booster. There's lots of other little perks, meditators with this technique. Lots of my students, they're like, the only reason I learned it was to stop getting sick when I went on holidays. That was enough. You know the adrenal letdown that you get when you go on a holiday and then you get sick? With a really steady practice, most of my students have managed to eliminate that. They don't get it anymore at all, which is, for me, such a perk because I used to get that all the time myself. You burn yourself into the ground to go on vacation and then you're snotty on a beach. It's not so fun. And all this physical output, I've got some students, they're like, oh, blah, blah, blah. You know, they're not interested in this at all. Their GP referred them, or their chiropractor, or their kinesiologist said, you need to sort your nervous system out. That's great. The fifth one is sleep. So a sitting of 20 minutes is the rest equivalent to 2-3 hours sleep. It would be wonderful if we were all getting enough sleep. But I teach ICU nurses and people in the film industry and doctors and surgeons and midwives. And like their work schedule, also parents of tiny people who aren't sleeping, and their work schedule is such that they're just not able to, or their responsibilities, or you know, elderly parents as well, that they have to medicate through the night. It's sometimes not even a lifestyle decision, it's out of their hands, and their sleep is being impacted, and they'll use their practice to help offset that and to complement it. This one's becoming more. It'll be interesting to see over the next couple of years. I think digital technology is also impacting this area for us, so we'll see. That's why I keep asking everyone. Just keeping an eye on where everyone's at and what the most important thing is. And then this last one, I'm just going to put it all together, because consciousness, personal optimum, ancient knowledge, spirituality. Usually, and we can bundle all these together, usually this is the last thing on people's radar. For the most of my students, about 10 to 15%, this is their primary. But for most students, you can see if these things are being impacted, then this is like, oh God, yeah, great, just some memory. Okay, I just didn't, maybe in the future, who am I? I don't know, right now, I just need to cope with my days. And then once they start meditating, what happens is they start to reduce their stress and their clarity, creativity increases, and the physical well-being, and they're also sleeping usually better and a little bit less with their meditation practice, then all of a sudden they're like, hell yeah, open me up to this. This sounds great. I want to experience more gratitude. I want to be more compassionate. I want to know what expansion feels like. I want to be a more in-touch, loving human being. But you take someone, particularly if I get someone, you know, in the finance sector who walks through the door and this is, you know, their rating, this is a 9, they're looking at me like, what? Women, I'm talking about this. But long-term, it completely flips. This becomes the primary, and these are the student memories in regards to the stress. So I deliberately structure the way I teach around that. One more drawing. Have I left anything out? Is there anything? And Lucy, chime in, hon. Is there anything that you go, I don't really want any of those things, and what I really want is something else?
No.
No? Okay. So the course I teach is very, very specific. What we're doing is, with the integration, we've got our foundation meditation practice, and I teach it in, there's a 1 hour session, the next day there's a 2 hour session, the next day there's a 3 hour session. In the 1 hour session, what we do is we get very ancient, we get very Indian, and I do a little ceremony. Now, the ceremony, if you love ceremonies, you'll adore it, because it's fragrant, it's colorful, I get you to bring some fruits and flowers. I do it in exactly the same way that it's done in India. If you hate ceremonies like my husband, you'll love it because it's really short. But we do it for a couple of minutes. Now, I do it for a few reasons. It's not my meditation technique. It's a practice that's been around for a very long time. Same goes with the mantras. I didn't make them up. And there's this beautiful, long Vedic lineage of teachers that have kept this knowledge alive. And I do the ceremony essentially to express gratitude, to say thank you. It's my way of honoring that lovely lineage. But I also do it for you, the students. It's incredible. It does a few things. It works on a couple of layers. There's the reverence to the, you know, that this has been around for a long time. We also don't get to do a lot of ceremony for us in the West. It's not something that's available to us all the time. So what happens is, there's on a practical level, the brain, literally the neural pathways, jump up and around in unusual ways that are outside of our day-to-day programming when we experience something that's unusual. Now, when I say unusual, I mean I sing a song in Sanskrit. I don't have the best voice. But it goes for a couple of minutes, and I'm essentially just offering some little bit of rice and some fruits and flowers, and it's beautiful. But we stand there for a couple of minutes, and you hold a flower. Even that unto itself is enough for the brain to be like, whoa, I don't do this every day. And so it opens up the neural pathways, which is the perfect way for me to then, after that, give you your mantra, your little vibration, your sound. And it also, on another level, you know, when we're meditating, what we're doing is we're harmonizing the mind and the body back together, back into their most natural state. We know, that's our most natural state. We know inherently in here somewhere how to do that. We might have just lost a bit of touch with it. So it strikes a match to the knowledge that we all have within us on how to do that. And that's the first session. Ceremony, I give you your mantra. I mean, think of it as the key in the car. It's important, but it's not the thing. If the only thing I was doing was giving you a mantra, I'd just give you one right now. You know, it's not the mantra, it's how we use it and how we take it from a tool into a practice as well. So we put our L plates on. We take meditation with this technique. We take our mantra for a little spin. And then you get some homework, which will be no surprise. Go meditate on your own, and then you come back the next day. And on the next day, we really get much deeper on why that sound, how did I pick it, how do you know if you're using it right, and also how do you know if you're using it wrong. For me, success is not so much also, you know, going, oh wow, that's when I'm doing it right, but it's also knowing, oh, when I'm doing that, okay, I might need to let that go. And then we also meditate together in the session, and then we start also talking about how do we fit this thing in the day. So what does practice look like? We all live totally different days. Each day was probably structured differently. It's very rare now that someone kind of punches in 9 to 5 and does the same thing. You know, and Saturdays days is the day that we mow the lawn, and that's kind of the end of the weekend. It's a different life we live now. So knowing how to fit in your practice, really important. Workshopping that, we spend a lot of time doing that. And also because your meditation practice, when you learn now, for example, won't be the same long term. And then also, well, on the third day, what we do is we spend time talking about what about the extras? You know, it's brilliant for jet lag. What if you're sick? There's lots of ways in which you can do extra tactical meditation that will help stabilize and balance your body and mind. We do talk about neuroscience of the practice, the mind-body connection, what's really happening in the body. Like I'm saying, you know, it does all this for the body. Like how? I draw it all out for you. I like to use lots of different modalities for learning. Traditionally, meditation, and particularly Vedic meditation, is taught orally, which can be a little bit challenging if you're a visual learner or a kinesthetic learner like I am. So I like to layer in a few different things. And then also what we do is we start to dive into what to expect moving forward. Because the course and the way we operate it is, There's you learning how to meditate, and then there's ongoing support. Hopefully meditation helps you spell better. There's education. There's how you can reset the course again. And what this looks like is, because you've got your technique and your tool up and ready and you're practicing at the end of the course, so you graduate on that third session and you're done. But then what we do is we have a whole program that we put you through. So there's a beautiful digital program that we'll put you through so that you can then keep accountable for your practice, and we check in on you and make sure to see how you're going. You can also come to me with questions about practice. You know, one of my students is saying, look, my mom's really sick, really, really sick at the moment. She's just been diagnosed with something terminal. I'm so exhausted because I'm not sleeping. What should my practice look like? And I wrote her a whole program. Also, education for me is a big one. So we do a weekly meeting here on Tuesday nights, 7 o'clock. And all the students gather and we do, well, not all of them, they wouldn't fit in the room, but those that turn up, there's no RSVP, you just show. And we can do it online as well. Lots of students are tuning in from work, which is awesome because they start later, finish later. And what we do is we have tea and treats and we talk about knowledge. So tonight I'm talking about creativity through the Vedic lens. And then we talk about refining practice, and people present problems like, whoa, I'm finding, you know, the second one a challenge. And, you know, can I do 8 minutes instead of 10 minutes as my minimum? And all those kind of questions that people have. And then we meditate together. And what we do is we record all of those, and they're available online. We've got like a little scholar vault, so you graduate as a scholar, and you can access all of that. There's a massive, you can imagine, he's worth of backlog there in regards to all of those talks. So you can, at any particular point in time, go, yeah, yeah, recycling stress. I might be doing that, and listen to that lecture, or, you know, increasing clarity. Or, you know, love through this, through, you know, the ancient times, what did it mean and what does it mean for us now? These kind of things. So we really try to deliver as much as we can in regards to the education. And then the other thing we offer, which I love students doing, is resetting the course. I do it for two reasons. One, it's practical. You may not. You might go on a holiday and come back. Everyone does it. January is our biggest reset month. Everyone leaves in December being like, I'm going to meditate the whole time, it's been amazing. And then they come back super tanned and like, I drank my body weight in champagne. and literally sustained myself on mint starts. And then, you know, and they go, I just didn't practice for a month. You know, it's great, reset the course. You know, and then they're like, oof, I'm extra motivated thereon. But also I do it because some students of mine sit once a year. They just sign up and they've got their month, their March, their reset. And they hear it again differently because they keep expanding and growing. Their connection to themselves keeps expanding and growing. And it's like when you first time you see a movie, like, oh my God, that was great. And you watch it again and you're like, oh, hang on a minute. And the way in which the meditation is taught is this beautiful blueprint on how to live well. It's very hard to pick up on that subtlety when, like, the messaging, when you're really engaged in the practicalities. And I had a group, a couple of students raise it last week, and they're like, when you said that, I had no idea what that means. And now that I get what you mean about the letting go and being gentle and moving with, you know, nature's way and all these kind of things, that it's like how we meditate. And they're like, oh, I can do that here and here and here. It's a really nice thing to do. So I'm big on this. And what we do is, just to make life simple, is we include all of this in the course fee. So generally what we do is we do three payments of $400, and they're spread 3 weeks apart. In case you're not noticing anything's in threes, just makes our life easy from an admin perspective. So we do those, and if you've got a friend as well that has learned with the Broad Place, or a partner, or you want to learn with someone as well, we offer you a 10% discount. And my team, Emily had put it through before, they're amazing in helping you set all that up if you decide to enroll. What we do is we do a Tuesday, a Wednesday, and a Thursday, and we do a lunchtime session. So we start at 12 to 1. 12 to 2, 12 to 3, and we do a 6 o'clock session. And then we do Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And we've got two options here. So you can go, yeah, I'm going to do Tuesday lunchtime, Wednesday evening, and Thursday night. Or you might go, now I'll do all lunchtimes. Friday, what we do a 7 a.m. and a 10 a.m. And then we do an 11 to 1, and we do a 9 to 12. And you pick one of these. We just do a before work one. It's really helpful. And then we also do an after school drop off. It's also really, or waitressing time as well. I used to be a waitress, and I started to notice I couldn't even sit my own course if I was to be waitering. Because you're not doing 7 a.m. You can't do lunchtimes, you can't do evenings. But these ones before work are generally fine. So then you might go 10, 11 to 1, 9 to 12. And then the course, once you've finished that, then you access all of this ongoing. What have I missed out? I don't think anything. There's so much to fit in. Does it make sense to you guys? Questions about all of this? Or questions about meditation in general, or questions about the technique or the mantra or anything like that? Lucy, have you got any?
No, that sounds good.
Okay. What about you, ladies?
No, that's really thorough.
Yeah?
I've done a bit of reading up and got a bit of stuff, so it's kind of like more just, I just wanted to get a bit of more of the energy around it, you know? Like
yeah, of course. Read.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, it's, I mean, we have a long friendship relationship in regards to teacher-student. You know, I've got students that come every single week without fail. I've got some that come once every 3 months. You want to make sure you've got that connection with your teacher. Mm. It's kind of like, yeah, okay, you're on my wavelength in regards to education. I might not be on yours. You might go, Jesus, she talks way too loud, way too high pitch. And that's fine. And I can also recommend other teachers as well from Vedic meditation that keep it a very simplified basis.
Yeah.
But that's also something to consider. Any other questions at all?
When you do the 7 o'clock class, the weekly one,
this is on a Friday. Oh, yeah, on Tuesday.
Tuesdays. Do you talk and then you do a group meditation?
Mm-hmm.
So what, you talk like...
Half an hour, 30 minutes. We try to keep it to an hour, just because
people have got shit to do.
They've got shit to do and they get hungry. That too. We usually keep it to an hour.
Yeah, okay.
Every so often we run 5-10 minutes over. I mean, my challenge is I could talk under Western End, so I really got to rein myself in. But and again, sometimes the topic is deep and everyone sort of sits there going, Jesus, what does this mean for me? And other times it's light and easy and fun and everyone sort of bounces around different ideas and it sort of shifts and changes. We don't have a strict formula outside of, you know, everyone being open and honest. And people come, I mean, I've got students of mine who are so sweet and they come and they sit and they never say a word the entire time every week and then I'm like, are you enjoying it? They're like, love it. I'm like, okay, cool. You know, because there's no obligation to, like, you know, hold hands and share information, which would be creepy for me. But it's just, it's nice. It's really nice. It's a nice thing to go anytime. Like, I'm just going to jump back in. I had a student of mine ring me today, and she's like, I've got to get back onto Tuesday nights. I'm only doing once a day, and when I'm coming to Tuesday nights, I'm doing twice a day.
Mm-hmm.
So the math, if you do once a day, you get about 35% of the benefit. You do twice a day, you get 100% of the benefit. It's a cruel sway towards twice a day practice. But even 10 minutes makes a big difference. Because you're kind of emptying out the nervous system and the consciousness expands every time you do it. That said, I always say meditation guilt has got to be the most useless emotion ever invented. Getting stressed about meditation, it doesn't really go with the flow. But we do, you know, and so that's also something we talk about a lot. People get, no, I don't want to get strung out about my practice. And it's one of the reasons I became a teacher was because my practice was haphazard at best. And I had profound impact.
Do you practice at the same time every day?
No. My practice when I was a student of meditation for the last couple of years was really, really steady. And then since I became a teacher, I'm meditating with students all the time. And that's at all sorts of different times. Because I do private courses, it depends on what time I'm with them. It moves around dramatically. Yeah. And I haven't noticed any impact, which has been fascinating. Because I was, you know, like this with my practice. And then once it kind of went, whoa, and it still is great. So I was like, that's interesting. A lot of my experience has been on the ground, you know, as we call it, in the field. And really talking to students and querying and questioning. You know, it's a different time and everyone keeps changing and evolving too. And students also have unreal tips on how to fit it in.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I've found? You know, I've got so many students in the CBD, open workplaces. You know, I used to be an interior architect. I used to do corporate workplaces. It was so user-friendly. No non-hierarchical, to have everything open plan is mostly budget friendly for the client, and now no one has any privacy. So finding a place to meditate, and one of my students was like, oh, the churches, you just go sit in a church. There's so many of them in the CBD. And they're like, huh. You know, so that's been really helpful. Those kind of things, you know, that's why the community is really great.
And how many people go to these courses?
It depends. It depends on the session and they juggle around. Yeah. But generally we have, you know, anywhere between, sometimes it's one or two, sometimes it's 10. In Sydney, it doesn't tend to be more than 10. When we go to Melbourne and Byron and LA and so forth, because we're there every so often.
And shorter period.
Yeah, and they're bigger. But generally in Sydney, it's one of the luxuries that the Sydney students get usually is that the groups are a little bit smaller. Mm-hmm. That said, sometimes the energy in the bigger groups is unreal. Yeah. It just always seems to work out exactly the way it needs to work out. I love it. It's just been that you can sort of go, oh, I can see why this is a smaller group and there's like-mindedness, and I can see why this is a bigger group and it's unreal and diverse.
And with planning for the times to come, for kind of absorbing what you're learning, what do you think about, like, the combination for the short to long ones? And say, for instance, doing the, like, I know I couldn't come to the three-hour one after work.
So, sort of like,
you know, is it would it be a nice thing
just
to
for
do?
Concentration.
Well, yeah, just kind of really processing what you're learning.
So we stagger it in a particular way.
Yeah.
So the first one's 1 hour, then you come the next day, it's two hours, and then you come and it's 3 hours. And the way in which I structure it is that the knowledge, it builds and builds and builds and refines. And we have a break, by the way. I don't just talk for 3 hours.
No, I sort of mean as well,
but
like...
You mean after... No, were you thinking...
Yeah, or sort of like, say, for instance, if you came to the three-hour one, like, if you're going to... The weekend's fine because you kind of got your own time. But on a weekday, if say, for instance, on a Thursday, if you came from 12 to 3, would it... I mean, it's always nice to take time out, but would it be good to not go back to work after that? As a thing of processing... I can't quite grasp how much you want to sort of... Like if you're going to a workshop or a yoga retreat, you don't go and walk out and slam yourself straight back into a meeting of doing whatever to completely absorb the most. So I'm just trying to think about that.
Most of my students, for some reason, do clear out the day after.
Yeah.
They kind of go, okay, on Thursday and I'm finishing work at 11:30, I'm doing a half day or I'm taking the Thursday off.
Yeah, that's what I'm
thinking. But what's stopped?
Yeah.
Right. If you can, absolutely. Why not? I just as a little treat to yourself too. I mean, you've graduated and you're up and, you know, it's a beautiful thing to do. Mm-hmm. It's a... One of my students said it was the best investment. She was like, it was the best gift that I've ever invested in myself. And so having that... She also wanted to have that time afterwards. That was one of the students a couple of weeks ago. I was like, oh, that's a really beautiful way of putting it.
Yeah.
So if you can, yes. Mm-hmm. Like I try to say, you know, try to get an early night on the Friday night, for example. Don't come in Saturday, you know. Wasted if you can avoid it, or you know, people go, look, I'm gonna finish a Saturday and then go to a wedding and then come back at 9 a.m. on Sunday. I'm like, I just wouldn't, you know, like, I just, you'll be tired. I have had people do it. It's the only time in which they could do it. They had an unreal experience, but when avoidable, I think give yourself a little bit of space. What I'll get Shiri to do, and what I wanted to offer you guys is a gift to say thank you, because I know it's trouble, it's challenging coming, you know, on a Tuesday night, 6 o'clock, and what I noticed is that a lot of our students have done the research beforehand, and
getting started,
is that they've already done the research and they're excited to learn, and they came anyway, just to get a feel, and also, they wanted to, you know, it's really nice, they always say really lovely things about why they wanted to come, so we've started doing this, which is where we offer you a little gift. Basically, if you go, I want to learn, to say thank you for coming. If you want to get this back to me by tomorrow night, it can be Thursday morning, but just we sort of say within roughly a day, then we'll give you 20% off the course as a thank you for coming all this way. So essentially, you just photograph it and then email it back to us. What I'm going to get Shiri to do, who works with me, is she'll email you tomorrow anyway. So she's going to email you a summary and a calendar link and everything you might need in case you go, I've got more questions, I'm not sure, or I want to enroll.
Yep.
And then if you go, no, I need a couple of weeks to think about it, you're more than welcome to still do the friends discount if you've got a friend and so forth. But if you go, no, I'm already committed, and then you want to take this up, then you're more than welcome to. So I'll give that to you as well.
Thank you.
And then also, I'm going to give you my card, because you might have questions, and you need my number. And that way you can also call me.
I have got my number. Thank you.
And if you have any questions and you go, I need some more clarity around a particular thing, or, you know, as we all know, you leave the room and then, Lucy, I'm going to email that to you, don't you worry.
Thank you.
If you've got it, you're like, I can't get a phone. But if you And then you just, yeah, photograph it and send it back to Shiri. But if you need to email or question me in the meantime, mm-hmm. texting and calling is the fastest route.
Yeah.
My email inbox is a quagmire, to be polite about it. So if you text me and you go, hey, can you call me? I have one last thing I want to ask, mm-hmm. or something just occurred to me, you know,
yeah.
any of those kind of things, don't hesitate.
Mm-hmm.
Lucy, I'm going to make sure I text you my details. It's all good.
Thank you.
And then, yeah, if you're interested, I mean, I'd love to share it with you.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Beautiful.
Sounds great. Thank you.
We're early.
Are we on time?
No, we're early. We're early. But do you want to, which is so unlike me.
Yeah.
But is there anything else you want to check in on?
I'm good. That was really good.
Yeah,
it's
great.
Everything.
Yeah.
Well done.
As I was writing, I was
like, I liked the sea.
Yeah, yeah.
The little ocean.
The brain.
Yeah.
Yeah, where you dive down.
Yeah, yeah,
and I imagine it like that all the time. I mean, there's some beautiful water, ocean analogies that move and fit beautifully with spirituality. There's this gorgeous Taoist philosophy around, you know, the saying that you never step into the same part of the river twice. Have you heard that before?
Yeah.
Which is so, it's there to show the impermanence. And that you can step into the river over and over, but it'll never be the same part of the river because
mm-hmm.
the river is moving.
Yeah.
That's gorgeous. There's also another one around finding the underlying truth. And we get caught. It's like life is like this beautiful moving river, but we get caught in all the whitewash at the top. And we can't see what's going on. And we want to dive, submerge down, and find those little river stones that are like the actual truths. And so it's like all the noise and everything that we think is going on at the top, and then there's the reality underneath,
mm-hmm.
like the real truths to life. And so we're teaching ourselves to submerge and dive down and collect those. And it's a beautiful analogy for also when we're meditating. We're submerging, diving, bathing in that state of the true version of ourselves. And then we bring it back up with us. And then take it to the world and dive back down and then take it to the world. There's so much loveliness that goes with that. Water analogies are the best.
Yeah. Water's the best.
Yeah, it is. That's why Emily was like, do you mind? She normally stays and helps, yeah. put
yeah.
teacups away. She was like, I need to get in the water so bad. She's like, I seem to submerge myself. Do you mind if I split? And I was like, God, no. I've got that perfect. You start to feel, it's like March is coming.
Yeah,
so,
need to get in the water more.
Yeah, and we do. It's that same feeling. Actually, it's, Aaron says, he's like, each time he meditates, it's like going for a small swim. And I was like, uh-huh, I know, on a conscious level. And he's like, no, I just feel that refreshed. It's like, cool. but you know how you never regret a swim? I love that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's
so
good.
Now.
You are?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, perfect.
I was like, oh, maybe I might feel like it, but now I don't.
There was a lot,
yeah.
there was a lot of blue bottles.
Go.
So go to one of the pools.
Ah.
If you're
going
to swim in the sea, there's a lot of blue bottles.
Oh, right.